Radio.
Oh, it's rolling. Oh. Maybe I'll kind of face Tino.
It's not clear yet. I think it's standard.
There's those musicians who do their own tuning. Doesn't like Keith Richards have like 8 or 20 different tunes?
I don't know. I hear Joni Mitchell does, actually.
Really?
Use a lot of different ones, yeah.
Jesus. I do too, but it's only because I don't know how to tune. I always have weird tunes. So I think we started already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because it's rolling. See, the numbers are gone. If anyone, you know me.
I do.
And if anyone out there knows me, if there's anyone out there, probably not at this point, because this is the first one. This is the first Sing-Songers. It's called Sing-Songers.
Sing-Songers. Song-Singers.
Yeah. No, it's called Sing-Songers. Song-Singers makes too much sense.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And do those headphones work?
Yeah. Should I wear them?
Ah, whatever makes you feel comfortable.
All right.
I like wearing them because it makes me feel professional. And
rather professional.
God damn it, I'm unprofessional. I need everything, every crutch I can get.
Is this edited at all, or is it just
I'm too lazy to edit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, great.
I mean, if you...
This show's over before it's begun.
If you say something about your mom or something that you don't want on there...
Okay.
We'll cut it out.
I love you, Mom.
Did she, was she a sing-songer?
No, not exactly. So
I guess I should start it like professionally.
Yeah, I think you should.
I'm here with Robbie Foulkes. Such an idiot. Robbie is I hate being professional, but,
Are you reading? Not,
yeah.
Just read it.
It's just little scribbly notes.
Oh, okay.
13 albums. I didn't know you had 13 albums. Yeah. Jesus, I gotta buy some more.
You really should.
Yeah.
I might wait a long time for that to happen, but you should.
I know. I should have done it before. I'm really bad at researching, too. But I am a fan.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Likewise.
Yeah, but not of my music.
I just haven't heard it.
You're
sure
a fan of just me like hanging out and drinking, right?
I'm definitely that. But yeah, your multifarious talents, I'm sure I'm a fan of all of them. I just haven't heard you sing, I don't think.
Well, tell me more about
it. I heard you sing at that podcast that we did.
Oh, yeah.
In New York, you sang.
Yeah, and I played a little guitar.
You played a little
guitar. And then I stopped and I had you save me.
I played and you sang.
On the Skull Juice, yeah, on this very network. It's still available, the Skull Juice. Yeah, Robbie opened for us. And was actually part of the read that we did with Stephen Colbert and Scott Adsit and Robert Smigel. Yeah.
Well, my playing was the one point in the podcast where I felt, where I did anything, really, because you kept saying, you said several times beforehand, just do whatever, be Paul Schaefer, interrupt, contribute.
Yeah, but there were a million people on stage, yeah.
There were a million giants on stage, like, and one ant, and I'm not going to, interject in between Stephen Colbert and yourself and Louis C.K. What am I going to do?
I hated doing it, too. Andy Dick was very intimidated by the whole process.
Well, that makes two of us, yeah.
Well, I was too. I was a little nervous.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't appear so, but...
I come off very, very casual and comfortable. That's why I probably have like 20 cancers in me right now.
I thought you were going to say 20 trophies.
No. Speaking of trophies, you were nominated.
Oh, my God. I'm just setting you up here.
Do you prefer two-time Grammy nominated Robbie Foulkes or two-time Grammy losing Robbie Foulkes?
I think if you say the first, you can sort of pick up the second.
I know. It's a kind of a glorified way of saying losing. Yeah. But you got there. I mean, it's a huge thing. It's a huge thing, especially for a songwriter. That's what I want to talk about a little bit. Talk a little bit about your experience, if you want.
at the award show last night. It was. It's always interesting to me to see what music is to real people, you know, to like most of the people. And it's kind of like what you just said, like to be a songwriter in there is a little bit unusual, I guess, because everybody was singing their asses off, you know.
And who really writes their own songs anymore?
And they didn't write the songs by and large, I don't think. But great, like unbelievable, the best night of singing I've ever heard, like at a musical variety show by far, like, you know, compared to the Grand Ole Opry where like there's some 90-year-old women that get up and—
Oh, really? I thought that would be fun.
Oh, it's super fun. The Grand Ole Opry. But I mean, in terms of like blow your hair back.
Yeah.
Singing talent.
See, that's what I was thinking, because, you know, I've been to the Emmys and the Oscars, and you want to win really bad when you're there, because then you don't have to watch the rest. You get backstage and you get to eat shrimp or whatever. But this seemed like a show that would be just fun to just sit through.
I don't like to be backstage. I enjoy more just watching. And we had really good seats last night, fortunately. So that was that was a lot of it. I had some friends that were nominated, I guess, last year. And they went. I said, what's it like that we were in the back row million miles away? And that doesn't sound like any fun, because it's a 21,000 capacity arena, the Staples Center is. So when you're far away, you're like really far away.
Yeah.
But no, it was good to see just at a production level. It's just great to see the production unfold and how this part of the stage gets set up, and while that's being torn down, guys running around like, you know, crazy rodents. And
are you gonna write a song about it?
Maybe so. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, the wonderful night, I'm gonna call it.
your kids, the whole family looked great. I saw Facebook.
Yeah, I was there with my two of my three kids, and then my wife.
Now, what's that like? Okay, so I wanted to, because this podcast is for me, because I just started a band at the age of 52.
What's it called?
Sorry About Everything.
Great name.
Yeah.
Every time I say that phrase, it gets a laugh, by the way. I don't know. You say it from time to time.
I say it. It's my standard goodbye.
Right.
Because I feel like it just covers everything. I don't remember everything I've done for the night. And I just apologize across the board.
Right.
And mostly people accept it.
Yeah. I was going to say, that works?
Yeah.
It's just like...
Yeah. I mean, they're like, okay. All right.
It's
as
just
long
like
as you
Steve
apologize.
Martin, I forgot.
Yeah. Every once in a while I'll get, you didn't do anything. Or not accepted. But mostly it's like, I accept that. Thank you.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, I don't know. I don't remember everything I do. Even if I'm not drinking. You know, I'm erratic. This podcast is about me. But, well, what I was going to say. So I started this band at 52. Dumbest idea ever.
Yeah.
But it's because I remember ever since I was a little kid, I'd walk home from school, I'd have a song in my head and I'd sing it, and then I'd get a little confidence and I'd record it on my little tape player, and then after a few more years I'd maybe take a guitar class and try and write a song and then put it away. And then I remember picking up my guitar again when I was in my 20s and living with my friend Tom Bell, who was a great songwriter in his own right. And I say his own right as opposed to like with you, not with me, because I don't think I'm a great songwriter yet. But I just started picking up the guitar and was inspired by him. And then I started writing my own songs. And I still didn't have the confidence, but for like 20, 30 years after that, how old am I? I'm 52. I've been writing songs, so I have like maybe 60 songs accumulated, and I finally got the fucking balls to start a band and say, okay, I'm a songwriter.
Would you say it's a thing that you really want to do, you know, given a choice?
I think I always had it in the back of my head that would be the best thing, but I thought, there's no way I could do that. When did it hit you that's...
But why is that the thing that you want to do? And you're so good at everything you do, but like, is it because it feels so satisfying to have written a song or good to sing, or because that seems like a higher art to you, or what is it that elevates that?
It does seem like a higher art. You don't need a lot of people with you. All you need is you and your guitar and your imagination.
Whereas most of what you do is collaborative and depends on a community.
Yeah, especially, yeah. I mean, if I write a script, now I've got to get actors, you know. I could do this on my own. Of course, I have a band, but I could also go off with my guitar and just sing in front of people, too, which mm-hmm. I've done a little bit. I've gained a little confidence just because, I don't know if it's confidence or not giving a shit anymore, you know. I wonder how much of that is involved, like the not giving a shit. But like, when did it hit you? Like, this is it. This is what I want to do with my life.
Probably at 7 or 8, really. Yeah. I mean, as soon as I started playing, I think that was where, and as soon as you start like turning girls' heads, really, I think that validates it, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm certainly not going to run from here to there and turn a girl's head, you know.
Wow, yeah. I turned girls' heads the wrong way when I played for a while.
Really? You turn their heads away from you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this guy doesn't know anything.
A strong reaction in an event can be good.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, that's why I'm in S&M now.
But I think the idea that you can just go out and do it and that makes it different is maybe I don't think that's maybe true because but last night, you know, I was looking around the room at that event and thinking, well, there's 21,000 people, but there's only like 1,000 or 1,500 that are really like players of music or writers of songs and stuff, and yeah. The rest of them are people that make this whole.
Right.
Clumsy elephant thing move down the track.
And, yeah, like agents and managers. Yeah,
and label people and who and knows.
Label people, yeah.
And NARIS members. And so I think it is just as lumbering an industry as anything else probably.
Yeah, yeah.
If you get good at it and successful at it. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It's that way.
But so, yeah, so then you started early and then just recently you... Upland Stories was nominated.
That's my 13th
album.
According to you, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I started when I was young. My parents played, and I started playing the banjo when I was 7 and guitar when I was 11. And then I started making records, I guess, with other people in my 20s and didn't put out my first thing until I was fairly old, until I was 33, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Alabama at Night, that was nominated for the song, the best...
Yeah, that was nominated for American Roots song,
right,
and
yeah.
The album as a whole was nominated for folk record.
And are there songs on there that are autobiographical about where you first started and started playing music?
Yeah, there are a few that are kind of autobiographical, and then there are others that are just sort of based on stories or literature, I guess you would say, like older writers and stuff.
Right. That was one of my... I have it here. I have notes, you know.
Oh,
I tried
God.
To prepare.
Really?
Yeah. But, yeah, one thing I wanted to say... Where's that question? That was a really good question that I had about... Because... I guess when I write, and I gotta always bring it back to me.
Sure.
Because I don't, first of all, I don't know how to interview people. So, and I'm sort of narcissistic. And
this is definitely the most comfortable interview ever so far. I know that means good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people, I don't give a shit about people listening to this. They're probably just bored losers anyway.
I'd be curious to know if anybody does listen to this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let me know.
We'll see. We'll see. I'll plug it on my other podcast that no one listens to.
Good.
Yeah. I had one thing I always struggle with is the idea of like if these songs are true to me. Because I'll write a song and I'll go, that doesn't sound like me. And I'll play it for someone. And usually it's a girlfriend or an ex-girlfriend. They're like, why are you writing this? You weren't so romantic when we were together.
Mm.
And I'd write like a romantic song. And I don't know if it's just in my head, that's what songs are, romantic. Or if it's like Woody Allen says, you just try and make your art what your life isn't in some way, you know. And it's maybe it's... what I wish I was or what I would be if there weren't other fucking people involved, you know? Mm-hmm. How do you relate? Do you feel like you...
Well, I don't think there's a formulaic comeback to that because I feel like there's the line is a little blurry and so I'll find out a lot of times by just performing it, and then I'll understand as soon as I perform it for an audience, oh, this is not me, and I can't pull this off. It's like I might think the song is okay or has good points, but I can't present it convincingly.
Right.
And, I don't even know that I get that so much from any particular feedback from people as you're getting it from girlfriends. Is just the self-knowledge right away as soon as you present it. This is not me.
So when you have a great song that's not you, do you keep playing it? Or do you just kind of set it aside and you're like, well, maybe I'll sell it to someone?
I can't think of an example that's off my head that's a great song.
You hate yourself.
That I've given up. But sometimes just a musical style that doesn't fit you, you know, or it's a little too, you know, funky or dancey or something. It's probably not me.
Well, that's an interesting point, too. Like, when I write, I try and, well, I start with words first. You know, unless I'm a little drunk, then I have kind of a melody in my head and words, you know. But I never sit down at a guitar and, like, think of a lick because I'm not that great of a guitar player. I don't even know how to bar a chord, so, yeah.
You know what a bar is?
What? Well, yeah, I know what a bar is.
Like what?
And I've been barred from them. I try and think of when I think of what I want the song to be, then I try and think of the character of what I want the character of the music to be. Mm-hmm. Do you? I'm sure you do all this
like you're thinking
without even thinking about it.
No, but you're thinking it's like a Jonathan Richman kind of a sound, or it's like this kind of a sound or that kind of a sound.
Not even like what type of artist, more like do I want this to be kind of a sadder song or a funkier sound or kind of old-timey, you know? You know, like, and I'm not that great at, you know, playing different styles, but certain chords are reminiscent, you know, certain chord structures I feel sometimes are here. This is why I brought the guitar, because I have this song called Extraordinary Woman, and I kind of wanted to write like an old timey, I don't even know what the era would be, 20s or 30s kind of song. So it starts like that. She's an extraordinary woman. She's an extraordinary girl. I can't begin to describe her, but I guess I will. I know that kind of just like felt like an old-timey 20s.
Yeah, like
or
some
30s.
Paul McCartney would put on an old Beatles record or something.
Right. That's probably. I probably didn't even hear the original. I probably heard like Paul McCartney doing what I want to do, which is like go back.
Like he'd do that voice with "She's an extraordinary."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wanted. When I wrote it, I was like, oh, this would be nice on a ukulele, you know, or something like that. So I don't know if you do that, because I know you know a lot of your songs have character in the music that. Collates with the words, you know. I don't know if you're conscious of doing that, you know.
No, not really.
Yeah, like I mean, like a song like "Let's Kill Saturday Night." That's a fucking, you know, it's a rocking song. It's ironic about like partying,
because things aren't going anywhere in that song,
right?
But
I'm sure a lot of people listen to that song and just consider it their party song and don't even listen to the words. Yeah, like some morons.
Again, I don't
know
about the term. A lot of people, but I think that I think it's really something that I don't think about. But I would say that's from observing.
I think it instinctually happens.
Some of the results that it might be interesting to have that kind of a contrary tension between what the music is saying and what the emotion of the lyrics is saying.
So sometimes,
it's too clearly lined up. It's just something that's too
right.
On the
it's
nose,
hitting you
and
on the
it's
head.
Boring.
I think Elvis Costello does that too. Like where he'll write a angry song, but it'll be really pretty or something like that. You know, and I think you do that too with "God
like,
Is Not Real."
I want you or something like the beginning of "I Want You" kind of tricks you into thinking, oh,
yeah, exactly,
baby, yeah,
yeah, yeah. "God Is Not Real" is a very pretty song.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That's designed after a kind of an older template, I guess. I mean, that's almost a parody, almost.
Right.
I mean, because because it disguises itself as a sweet old country
right.
waltz.
I think, Let's Kill Saturday Night is, and we're using the word parody, but I consider it a high form of parody. But Let's Kill Saturday Night is almost a parody of a let's go out and have fun.
Yeah, I got kind of offended almost. I'm too sensitive about this stuff, I'm sure, but there was a piece in the New York Times that came out maybe 7 years ago about a digital package of 50 songs that I put out through my website. And it was generally an okay review, but he said, Ben Ratliff was the writer, and he said, some of this verges on parody. He said, some of it's almost parody. And I was like, no, some of it is parody.
Oh, that's why you're offended.
There were a couple parody songs in it.
I get offended by the word parody because I think of Weird Al Yankovic and who I hate.
But there's a lot. There's Mad Magazine and Stan Freeberg.
Well, satire.
And there's no end.
Can we just say satire?
Parodies and Carol Burnett on
right.
And like stuff that's so great.
No, you're right.
But
I think of it more satirical. Loose parody is more satirical to me. And it's all, we're just having a conversation about the meaning of words. But, parody to me is like if you take the exact chords and the exact melody like Weird Al does and just change the words a little, from beat it to eat it. And
I disagree with you about Weird Al. I'm not his biggest fan, and I don't own the records. But when I hear it, I'm kind of pleased by it. I think it's pretty crafty, and I think, like I said, Mad Magazine parodies I love, and it's just sticking the words into old Christmas songs or whatever it is. But I love it because it's kind of a desecration, it comes from an impulse of destroying something.
I think back in the early days of Mad, it was exciting. It just got boring to me after a while.
Yeah.
You know, and seemed easy, Come on, another one rides the bus.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
someone,
you're right.
Someone said to me once, think of something better than another one rides the bus. And I'm like... another one wipes the butts.
But,
and he's like, yeah, okay, that's
better.
You're
doing a better parody.
Yeah, still... exactly. It doesn't take much.
Yeah.
I could have written that song in 3 seconds.
So you're not denigrating the form. You're just saying you don't like Weird Al so much.
Yeah, I don't like Weird Al.
Yeah.
I won't say I won't like Weird Al. I don't like his songs.
I
met him. He's a nice guy.
Okay.
Like Bob Odenkirk said, he should be called Nice Al, not Weird. There's nothing weird about
him. Well, anybody who says a nice guy, automatically, I think that's a bad put down of somebody. Any person that's making music or doing art or whatever, oh, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, thank you.
We know what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, there's something insidious about him. I'm going to get him one of these days. So as we were talking about writing and what you're thinking when you're writing and you realize that you're doing this instinctually, I was thinking to myself, what if I'm ruining Robbie? What if I'm bringing this too much to his attention, because I have a fear of learning too much. When I didn't know much about music, I wrote more interesting lyrics and melodies. And the more I learn, I become a little more conventional in my writing, which isn't that bad either. Maybe I have catchier songs now.
Right.
But I was writing more interesting songs. Do you feel like you run into that road at all?
I do, but I also feel that's the problem of knowledge is solvable by other knowledge. I think so. So knowing that it's a problem to get away from that original impulse that draws you to music, that innocence and that not knowing things that makes a song stronger in a way. If you know that that's a problem, then you can kind of counter it.
Right.
And if I know that my brain's getting old and that that I'm more resistant to new ideas, so I think knowing that helps me just know to overcome it and
right.
work to overcome it. So I guess that's what I try to do. And really, sitting in a room and writing a song is just like it was 40 years ago or whenever I started at first. It's there's no body of rational thought that turns it into a procedure so that the outcome is any better. It's just staring out the window and going blah blah blah.
Yeah, if you think too much, then you're dead.
The
almost.
Thought just doesn't help with it at all.
Lou Reed said the trick to writing songs is get out of the way.
Yeah. I mean, he was the ultimate first thought, best thought guy, I think, in rock music. Lou Reed was. But he also, he wasn't into drafting, right? I mean, he wasn't into second and third drafts, at least from what he said in interviews. And it sounds like it in a lot of the songs.
Also, he tried to make songs literature, so it's kind of contradictory that he wouldn't go back and rewrite.
Right. What kind of literature, Jack Kerouac, or what kind of literature is written in that way? I'm a big believer in editing, and I think they're two equally valuable sides of the coin, like honoring the impulse and then going back and saying, no, this is shit, and throwing most of it away.
Yeah, yeah. And keeping what is instinctual and good still there, you know?
Yeah. What you want to sing a week later is like one sign, you know?
Exactly. Or years later. I find, you know, you're talking about writing then and writing now and the differences and the similarities. Since I'm getting a band together now, I'm looking at songs I wrote 20, 25 years ago, which is interesting. And I'm doing that with my regular writing too. I've written plays and screenplays and I feel like I'm teaming up with a younger me.
Your younger self. Yeah.
Have you done that?
Yeah, I did it just the other week. I was stuck on a song and then I remembered something that I'd started writing a year and a half ago that went south, and I just went back to it. It was a good exercise because I hardly ever do that. And I thought, I just got to do this more often. Just turn back in the notebook and see.
But that's why you keep that, right? That's why you keep all that stuff.
I guess it's a new idea to me. I got to do it more often. But I think you're probably more organized than I am. If you
no,
have
I'm
stuff.
God no, it's everywhere.
Really?
But you know,
but you
I,
remember
it's still
it.
There.
Something pops into your head and you remember it.
I'm more organized in a way where it's in boxes, in messy boxes somewhere. You know. Like I'll come across lyrics and it's weird because the melody kind of comes back. If it's strong enough, then I'm like, oh shit, that's worth looking into.
I'll come back from 20 years ago.
Yeah, if I still remember that.
Well, that's exactly the reason that I don't record anything. I think a lot of guys work with recorders, but I always feel like if I can remember this tomorrow,
exactly
in a month, much less tomorrow.
I've lost a lot of recordings and sometimes for my own sanity, I have to say, but I kind of believe it. If it's worth remembering, I'll remember it.
Right.
Yeah. I wrote, I have a one song that we're recording now that I wrote, I started writing, like in 1992. I remember that because it's when I had a motorcycle and it was stolen. And the first verse is like, about my motorcycle being stolen. And I wrote a whole song about my motorcycle. Because it was the only thing I loved.
Yeah.
And the chorus was like, I just hope they'll take good care of her. I don't mind a share as long as I know she's okay for sure. And then I put it away because I'm like, it's just about a fucking motorcycle. And as the years went on, I started thinking about this song and the melody was still in my head. And I thought, there was one time my mom gave away a kitten and I was really like that we loved and we had for a month and I was really upset about it and how I thought, I just hope they're taking care of her. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of like that motorcycle song. And I wrote that lyric and so it was about the motorcycle so it started off, someone stole my motorcycle the other day in the present and then I used to have a kitten, so that's in the past, and it still didn't come together. This is like 10 years after the motorcycle. Then 20, you know, like recently, like in the last 10 years, I had a daughter.
Okay.
And then I started thinking.
You didn't lose her.
No, didn't lose her, but I'm going to lose her. I'm going to lose her to, she's not going to be my little girl anymore. She's going to grow up. She's going to be with people. She's going to have her heart broken and that was the third lyric. That's when the song came together. So it took like fucking 30 years to write the song,
now
but I love it.
It's a country hit, it sounds like. Because it ends up in like pure sentimentville, starts with a small observation, smallish, and moves up to my heart's broken.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very astute of you to say that because I didn't even think of it as a country song at all. Of course, you know, I just twang on my little guitar. And when I played it for my band, it's got a country feel now.
Okay.
Definitely. It even ends with like kind of country twang.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's a smart chain of events that you set up there. Because
it's not even smart. Yeah, it's and thank you, but it's just it just fell into place. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I always remember, like, a friend of mine placed a song with Peter, Paul, and Mary a long time ago, maybe 25 years ago. And so, and he was a big admirer of them. And Paul called him up, Paul Stuckey, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, we recorded your song because, like, we started listening to it. And we said, oh, we know where this is going. But then it didn't go there. And it ended in a different place than we all thought it would end. And yeah. I always remember that. That's one of those simple little observations that
Well, you're a storyteller. I mean, I love your songs because they take you through a trip. Definitely.
Well, thank you. I think I started going for that since I heard that remark made by Peter, Paul, and Mary.
How long ago was that?
Like I said, 25 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I was writing shit songs before that.
One of my favorite songs of yours that really hits me on a personal level is That's Where I'm From.
Oh, thank you. And that's the one you heard in New York where you got mad at the guy who was about to buy the record. You remember?
I remember getting mad at a guy, and maybe I remember it because you keep retelling the story. So
he was talking during the song. You were mad at him, and like a half hour later, there's a record line. I'm standing at the head of the line selling my silly little $15 records, and that guy comes up, and he starts talking before I'm making the sale, and you just kind of loomed forward from out of nowhere, as I remember it, and you said, this asshole, you know what he was doing while you were playing? And the guy turned, like, what the hell? And you said, he was just talking so that no one could hear what you were saying.
Yeah, and the guy was acting like your biggest fucking fan.
He melted into a midget, and he looked angry, but he just walked away, like you intimidated him.
I also think he cut in line.
He cut in line also.
Yeah, I think so.
But the end of the story is that you handed me $15 because I lost the sale to you.
Yeah, who knows how many more sales you lost to. Like, people probably backed away.
You should come on the road with me and be the sales killer.
I think I owe you a lot of money. But that song, I mean, I could understand getting mad about that. I get mad if anyone's talking through a performance. You know? Well, why even come?
Yeah.
You know? But
that includes your band, Sorry About Everything? Don't people talk?
I don't want them to.
But it's when the louder it is, the more they'll talk, right? Paradoxically.
I know. I don't want to be too loud, though. We're going for like a Jonathan Richman kind of sound.
Oh, okay.
But I think we are a little loud. We got a real drum set that makes things louder.
Makes things loud.
Yeah. But this song, God damn it, will you please let me talk about your song? Enough about me.
Enough about me.
No, I've been only talking about me. This is the worst interview you've ever done.
It's a good podcast so far, yeah.
I like this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should drink.
It's going 32 minutes and 52 seconds so far.
Yeah.
Well, I had a Perrier, and I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, do you want another one?
Sure.
Can someone bring... Is anyone even in the other room? Okay, I just saw a shadow move. But okay, so That's Where I'm From. I wanted to talk about that because, okay, here comes your Perrier.
Is this the studio Matt. Where you and Andy did? Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Matt. No problem. And sorry about everything.
They're nice guys. They're like young guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Andy hits on all of them.
Okay.
Yeah. When he's drunk.
And this is where it was, did you say?
Where we do
the podcast?
Skull Juice. Yeah, we still do it. He's sober again.
Oh, I thought
again.
You stopped doing it.
He's sober again. So
okay.
We're doing. I actually kept doing it while he was drunk. I swore I wouldn't, but I feel like with drinking, and now we're getting off the topic of sing-songers.
Good.
But
I didn't come here to talk about songs. Damn it.
This is going to be, this is the one and only sing-songer. It's going to just be Skull Juice 2. But, I just decided, well, sometimes when you punish someone for drinking, they drink more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, we'll keep doing this. I even bought him a few drinks, you know? He's like, just give me, I'll be good. And he was actually pretty good. But he gets bad fast, you know?
Wow.
And I got the hell out of the bar before he got bad. So
I don't know him well, but from the day that we did that podcast,
he's
very
sweet.
He looked Well, I wasn't going to say
sorry.
That.
Sorry.
No, he looks healthy. He looks like wiry and pretty strong and healthy.
Yeah, yeah. He's fit, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's he keeps telling stories because he was a very sickly child. He learned about health on his own. His parents would laugh at him because he'd say, can we just go organic or vegan or something? And this is back in like the late 70s, early 80s. Huh. You know, he was like way ahead of his time. But they just laughed at him and ate hot dogs and they're all dead now.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. They died of cancer like almost immediately after he moved out of the house.
Oh,
yeah. okay. Oh,
that's
right. You're
I'm
trying
from.
To distract me from your music, is what you're doing.
This is like the first Letterman with Bill Murray. Like, you got me again.
You're going to be on my last show, too, which is this one right now.
Like my nominations, first and last.
It hits me hard because it's not about me. It's the protagonist of that story, and I don't even know if it's you. Is my dad.
Mm.
It's he worked really hard. He came from a very poor Greek village, you know, where they farmed and went through a lot of hardships.
Uh-huh.
And his sons had it really easy, you know. But how much of that? And where did that song come from? Is it slightly autobiographical? Because I think I saw you perform it once, and you said, this song's really not about me, but it's about this guy. And I didn't know if you were just distancing yourself from it or if that was true.
Well, there's details in it that I probably put in it just to make it not about me. Like the guy that's singing it is a white-collar worker. He refers to his white-collar. I'm not really a white-collar worker.
Yeah.
And he refers to... Shoot, there's another reference in there. I can't think of it now. But then the stuff about, he went to night school. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff in there like that, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't know if you ever were a white-collar worker.
I guess I was an office temp, if that counts. But
that
this guy is like, I think he's like come from the farm to be a lawyer or something in life. And but then there's these other references. There's a goat in it, which like we had goats when I was a kid. So I think it's kind of a 50-50.
And was your dad a farmer?
I mean, he was, no. He was, we had a little farm that was sort of a self, whatever you call it, self.
More of a hippie kind of?
Subsistence, yeah, hippie, with a couple animals and a big garden and this and that on 10 acres. But the sentiment is, the sentiment's definitely, it feels honest and true to me. It's just a little bit on the more conventional side of a country song than I'm used to writing. And so at first it made me feel a little squirmy to be the deliverer of it when we do it. And I still think there's I think there's some hipsters in the room now and then that are unwilling to swallow it all the way maybe. But on the whole, it surprised me that that such a nakedly sentimental kind of a country song, with people like you, for instance.
That's what we love. We want more.
I love it too.
Yeah.
I love it too.
I'm Facebook friends with John Darnielle, who's in the Mountain Goats, and I read a post of his.
North Carolina guy. Good guy.
Yeah. You know him?
A little bit. I did a show with him a while back. And
oh, my God. That would have been the best show.
It was a good show. It was, do you know Dina, the improv gal from Chicago? Dina, Fackless is her name. She works at Second City.
She put
together a benefit for breast cancer, and he played, and I played. We were both alone, and he's a good guy.
Yeah. God, that would have been a good show to see.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it would have. I would like it. You wouldn't because you don't like yourself.
Hey.
Come on. You don't like yourself.
No, not so much.
Admit it.
Admit it.
That makes a good songwriter. I don't like myself, too. I kind of love myself, but I kind of hate myself, too. I think you have to be both, right?
I don't know. I can't stop thinking about myself. Does that mean I like myself?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you got both in you. You have to. Yeah. But wait, what was I talking about? Help me, because you're not drinking, and I am.
We were talking about That's Where I'm From.
Yeah,
and then you were pivoting onto something else, I think. But I forgot.
Yeah. Well,
podcast over.
All right, rhyming.
Oh, God.
I really want to talk about rhyming because I have a trick with rhyming, and I wonder if you have the same trick.
Oh, tell me.
So if I have a bad rhyme,
What's a bad rhyme, first of all? Like time and fine?
There's a specific example I'm thinking of, and I hope I could remember it. In one of my songs that I wrote with Tom Bell, I wrote a lyric. It's called I'll Drop Dead. The song's called I'll Drop Dead. And I wanted to rhyme. Oh, God. I'll think of it. I could bring it up on my computer.
Okay.
And then I'll bring up the exact lyric. And
I'll sing a song that...
Oh, yeah, please sing a song.
Dino's looking on his laptop.
Not that one.
For a ride from
that's my least
ago.
Favorite of your songs. I mean, I like the words.
That keeps throwing me off in the strings there. Like, what the...
No, the pick. Keeps... You don't use picks, do you?
I do. I just don't keep them in the strings like that.
Oh, you don't? Where do you keep your picks? In your pocket?
I guess so, yeah.
That's a good singer-songwriter tip. Keep them in your pocket. That probably makes them out of tune, right?
I don't know.
I think Tom Bell used to do that. I got to hang out with you more. What was my band called? Back then, we called our little group Green and Green. Okay, here it is.
If you had a proper like comedian on the show, all sorts of great stuff would be on right now.
Oh, here it is. Okay, so
is that you?
Yeah. Okay. See, now, if you went from student to prudent, that would be dumb because people don't usually say prudent. That's not a word that...
That wouldn't be prudent. I just thought of Dana Carvey right away when you said prudent.
Oh, I see. But I put the word that you would say least first.
Right.
And
that
then
makes sense.
The more common one. Do you do that?
I think that's totally the way to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good principle for sure.
Yeah. It's a trick.
It's a trick.
Yeah. It makes you seem smarter, right?
Yeah, it just makes it flow better, you know?
But you're like, wow, that guy's using a word like prudent. Oh, and then it fits with student perfectly. But if you went student prudent, you're like, oh, you're forcing it now. And have her and cadaver.
Right.
People said I could have her, but I wouldn't.
But you
wouldn't
went the opposite
prudent.
Way with that, because cadaver came second.
Right, because, yeah, you're right.
So, I don't think it's a rule, but it's a good principle so that things don't bump up in the song and like stop your attention, fix your attention on some detail of the
but
writing.
But I guess cadaver with student would be like, oh, that worked together.
Right. I see.
You know.
Student. What is the whole lyric again?
People said I could have her, but it wouldn't be prudent, so I'll be a cadaver for some medical student. The song's called I'll Drop Dead. I'm dropping dead for you because you're a femme fatale, you know.
Works for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it works, but that was my trick.
Yeah. Put the more exotic word first.
Yeah.
I mean, in any event, whenever an exotic word appears, it still has to be justified, but just in terms of the rhyme.
Yeah.
You know, it prudent could pop up and you're thinking, oh, what's the clever rhyme that's about to happen?
Right.
You just use the word prudent.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it isn't completely justified by the lyric already, you know, it should be already.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did the old switcheroo.
This is really getting boring.
No. This is good. This is exactly, I want to get into the dumb stuff too.
You're going to touch on these points with every future guest on this podcast?
No, I'm going to. Well, maybe.
And now it's the rhyme time. You should have come up with like specific section names for the podcast.
Oh, shit. That reminds me of a story where it's not even my story. I was listening to an interview with XTC, And the interviewer asked them, "Do you have a special, like, you know, do you guys sit around and think of lyrics together?" And he's like, "Oh God, no. We were at a hotel once, and there was like this British heavy metal band there, and they overheard this. All right, lads, everyone around the pool, it's lyric time." It's like, imagine the kind of shit that would come out of that.
Oh my God.
Gonna bumper.
It's like the Mr. Show sketch about the pool.
The guys musicians. Who fucked each other. Yeah.
Suck that shit. Did you write that one?
I was definitely involved with that. I remember the joke I was proudest of. is when they're saying, "You're gay," and they start miming fucking each other like, "This is you," even though they just did it on the video. That was a fun show to work on because you could do anything that was funny.
They did.
Got on. Yeah. I remember Bill Odenkirk and I were just doing a bit.
Bill?
Bill Odenkirk. Yeah, Bill's Bob's brother.
Oh.
Who started out as a chemistry major and, you know, graduated, and he was like a really smart chemistry guy. But he was really funny, and Bob just talked. He wasn't happy, and Bob said, "Come out and write for Mr. Show." And he was a great writer.
Is he still doing it?
He's writing for The Simpsons now, or at least one of those cartoons.
Wow.
But, we were just doing a bit in a bar at, it's closed now, the old Cat and Fiddle, where we were...
On Irving? No, on... is it here?
Yeah, sorry, it's here. I always think you live out here, but you don't.
I was thinking of the Tin Cat, is that it? Anyway,
I don't know Chicago, kind of, but it was on Sunset. But we would do this bit where we'd bump into each other and be like, "Fuck you, I'm gonna fucking take you out, I'm gonna fucking take you out," and then they start like, I'm gonna be all over your ass, yeah, I'm gonna be on your ass, I'm gonna marry you, and I'm like, "Oh my God, that is so fun." We just started laughing, and then we ran over to Bob and David and we're like, "Can we do this as a sketch?" And we wrote it as a sketch where two guys who just bumped into each other wouldn't let go of it and married each other and out of spite and just drove their... Do you remember this bit at all?
Yeah.
You don't have to lie.
This is the... But this is the reason why everything I had on you, because you're saying the filters, the ultimate authorities were Bob and Dave.
Yeah, and they... anything that made us laugh, they're like, "Oh, right, yeah." I mean, you know, it had to have substance in some way.
Yeah.
Like, silly jokes would have to turn into bigger... more beautiful sketches, you know.
Okay.
But we really racked our brain to make something that made us laugh Mr. Show worthy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Do you have a
Is that the same way with songs?
The brain racking. Do you have a favorite sketch that either that you did or didn't work on?
Well, I remember very soon after Mr. Show went off, I thought of this idea, and I'm like, "God damn it!" Scott Adsit and I were doing a bit, kind of like the way Bill and I were, and I'm like, "This could only be done on Mr. Show," but there was no Mr. Show anymore. And when we brought it back, I remembered because I had it in my notes, and it was the idea that, you know, that old trope. When you say something about someone really bad, like call them a cunt, then they wind up, you know, behind you.
So this sketch from the new show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did it on the new show.
Yeah. And, I think that was the best sketch of all the new show.
Yeah. I really love that sketch. Yeah. And it's because I've been waiting to do it for years on Mr. Show, because there is no other show that would do something like that.
It's hilarious, and it goes to what you're saying about the Bill too. Like it just keeps moving along and turning into something bigger and better.
Than
before.
Yeah, I remember I when we were shooting it, I thought it was very important for everyone who heard the word cunt about them. They had to have their hands on their hips and just kind of have their head tilted and kind of look angry, you know, kind of cunty, uh-huh. if you will. Uh-huh. That's the universal stance for cunty, like just hands on your hips, head tilted, sour expression on your face. So when they had to find the missing little girl, I really wanted her in that stance, and she did it perfectly. But Bob was like, God, you're obsessing, you know, you're obsessing so much about this, you know. He made fun of me the whole time, but I think it worked. I think it helped.
And your acting was great in that too. Very
naturalistic,
sensitive performance.
Yeah, because I've been broken up with before.
Yeah,
it's hard.
You drew from the well.
Yeah, I have some songs. See, I'm gonna bring it back. I have songs about being broken up with.
Well, would you like to play one now on your podcast?
No. I'd rather you play a song, but you don't have to. But I'd like you to. Or we could keep talking.
Mm-hmm. You could play a song off of a record. That wouldn't be as interesting, probably.
Do you want me to play the song? If I play one, will you play one?
Sure.
If I show mine, will you show yours?
Sure.
All right, so I'm going to
see which one's bigger.
I wonder if I should play the one that I described to you about my kid. Or there's another one that's also about my kid that I always think, oh, maybe Robbie will like this because it kind of sounds like a country song.
That is the only kind of music that I really like at all, is country music.
I'm gonna do the second because I already described the other one, and I think I played it on Skull Juice. And okay. I don't know if I played this one yet. I think I might have too. But there ain't no payphone here. Oh, Jesus, I'm drunk. There ain't no working payphone here in Needles. He said as if it was needless to say, with the look of an Eskimo who's been asked for tuxedos. Oh, the way you glared at me the other day. Leaving California ain't so easy. When you leave your future with your past. But the flag I fly this time is not surrender. It's the freedom flag that I fly at half mast. Why did I have a daughter if I didn't want to cry? It's like dousing with water, the very thing that I want dry. Dreaming of your life without your heart's pulse. Sure can throw you off in desert heat. Severing your ties and making love to lies brings cowardice, regret, and foul deceit. I tried to be a good dad. I tried, for God's sake. I tried not to be so bad, and I'm trying to make this song stay mostly fake. There ain't no work in payphone here in Needles, and as it happens, those words sure fall true. So I'll use this payphone that don't work here in Needles. Take this opportunity to not call you. Yeah, I'll take this opportunity to not call you. Thank you.
All right.
So that was
country-y. That's a little raw.
It's a little country-y.
Yeah.
I'll give you a little background on that.
Yeah.
The songwriting of that. Back way before I had a daughter, I was driving from California to Chicago and stopped at Needles and had to call my girlfriend, we were fighting, and stopped at Needles and couldn't find a working payphone, and walked into a bar, and I said, hey, do you have a payphone? The payphone out there doesn't work. And the guy just said, there ain't no working payphone here in Needles. And I'm like, whoa, that's a good line.
Yeah.
And the idea of
iambic, like... iambic already.
Yeah.
There ain't no working payphone here in Needles.
Yeah, exactly. And so I wrote those, and I wrote a couple lyrics down, and it was just about breaking up and not being able to call someone after you've left. Hmm. And then I found those lyrics a few years later, and wrote a couple more. And then I had a daughter and did break up with my wife. And, you know, you feel guilty with a breakup. Mm-hmm. But I wrote it as if I was leaving them physically and spiritually, you know, just leaving them. Even though I didn't do that in real life. So that's another song that I wrote in stages, you know, as it goes on. Like, there was like a 20-year period of writing that song.
That's interesting. You really keep the old things percolating, you know, the stuff from years and years ago.
Well, that song always kind of, hit me in some way, you know.
It's dense. Like, each line is pretty dense.
Yeah.
In that song, and I'm not in a position to criticize it. But
no,
if I had those lyrics, I would cut stuff out, I think. And and there's another interesting thing I was thinking about when you were singing, like the mispronunciation of words. Like you said, you mispronounced opportunity or made the stress different.
Right. Yeah.
And there was another word from before that. And some writer told me that I told me long ago not to do that, but I've seen that, and so I try not to. But I've seen that as a trend, like in hip hop, I think, basically, with the way that the words have to be slotted so exactly, the laying of stress doesn't seem to matter nearly as much anymore.
That's interesting because I say opportunity twice. Mm-hmm. Do I mispronounce it twice?
I think so.
Because let me grab this again.
Opportunity, like the pitch.
Take this opportunity to not call you. So
they're raising a pitch on the last syllable.
But I say it twice, so I'm trying to think like the first. There ain't no working in my hair and needles. And as it happens, those were your fault, true. So I'll take this paper and no working hair and needles. I have to go through this whole thing. Take this opportunity to not call. So the first time I say it, I think I say it right? Take this opportunity to not call you.
I don't think that's a natural way to say opportunity. You say opportunity.
Take this opportunity. Oh, yeah. I'm hitting that, yeah.
You're hitting the E kind of hard.
Yeah.
But again, not necessarily criticizing. I'm saying that you might be right because I think modern music moves more in that direction.
You don't think that happens in like a Hank Williams song?
I don't think so much.
Really?
But
that's interesting.
I might be wrong.
That's interesting. So what would you cut out of the song? I mean, I know you only heard it once.
There's the line about cowardice and two other kind of hard nouns in the same line, right?
Oh.
Deceit, cowardice.
Yeah. What is that line? Fuck. It's hard for me to do it without singing it. Dreaming of your life without your heart's pulse sure can throw you off in desert heat. Severing your ties and making love to lies brings cowardice, regret, and foul deceit.
Yeah, I was kind of racing mentally to keep up with that while you were singing it. I mean, it's just a lot of information, I think.
Well, that's interesting. That's a good point. Like, to me, a song is 3 minutes long, and for the first time I hear it, I'm like, it's like poetry. And the second time is like, I'll listen a little closer. But like, so that's that type of song. Jonathan Richman will do a song where you get it immediately. He'll stop even and talk during it and go, this is what this song's about.
Yeah.
I think you're kind of...
And he's a great avatar of like totally simple language.
Yeah.
Like Lou Reed.
Right, but he fucks with with rhymes and mispronounces things all the time, actually.
Yeah. A lot of times for comic effect, I think.
Yeah. You
know? Like Comfortable in that one song.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So your mission statement, in a way, is to tell that story the first time to people where they get it. This is fascinating to me. This is why I'm doing this podcast.
I think I had a problem with that second verse when you were singing it, to be honest. And I think part of it was the density, but another part of it is that it's like the narrative kind of halts while you're making observations, you know?
Right.
And so
it's not pushing the story forward.
Right.
Let's think about. Sorry, I don't want to.
Yeah, it's just asserting, not just, but it's asserting things. And so this might be more personal thing because, again, like I was saying about hip hop before, but in like country music nowadays, like there's so much weight on asserting things and making, like, for instance, a moral message. Well, life just turned her that way. You know, that's an older example of that. But assertions, but I think the assertions still have to be sort of balanced against the natural flow of narrative, and not just break in the narrative while you assert too much. You know?
Right, right. Well, let me, if you'll indulge me, let me try and go through my head what I think every verse is, and see what I accomplished and what I failed at. Because this is good. I love this. The first line, the first verse, obviously, is just setting everything up. The line about needles, and I'm having trouble in my relationship. Mm-hmm. The second line, what is the second line?
Maybe you could just say it or sing it.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta get the guitar in my hand at least.
Sure.
The way you wanted me the other day. Leaving California ain't so easy. When you leave your future with your past.
Those are the first two lines.
That's the second verse.
Oh, the second verse.
Yeah.
Well, can you back up to the first verse?
So there ain't no working payphone here in Needles. He said, as if it were needless to say, like the look of an Eskimo who's been asked for tuxedos, or the way you glared at me the other day. Right. That's first verse. Second verse is, leaving California ain't so easy when you leave your future with your past. That means I'm leaving my daughter with along with my wife.
Right.
And you leave your future with the past.
I understand it totally when you say it. I don't think I did when you sang it, but nobody's supposed to necessarily.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like them to.
Yeah.
Eventually, at least.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
When you leave your future with your past. But the flag I fly this time is not surrender. It's the freedom flag that I fly at half mast. That song, that lyric I wrote so long ago, it's pretty vague to me. It's very poetic. But I think what it means is, I'm not giving up. I'm moving on in a more positive way, but I'm sad about it also. Uh-huh. Right?
Now, the third line is, I know you're like talking about important things, but the third line is the third line always the same in syllable content? And do some of the third lines go da-da-da-da-da rhyme, da-da-da-da-da rhyme, and some of the third lines in other verses go da-da-da-da-da-da-da surrender?
I think the third verse is the most different. I'm not conscious of what I'm, if I'm writing in what meter.
Oh, okay.
So you could tell me, maybe.
What's the third line of the first verse? Was it the lies?
The first verse.
Sorry, my memory's like a sieve. You just said what it was.
Yeah, that's all right. The first verse is, there ain't no working payphone here in Needles. He said, as if it were in Needles to say. The third line is just silly, with the look of an Eskimo who's been asked for tuxedos, or the way he glared at me the other day.
So it's the same.
Yeah.
I think it kind of rhymes the first time. It doesn't rhyme so much lines one and three on the second verse.
Right. Yeah. I think so. And then the verse that's the most different is, Dreaming of your life without your heart's pulse sure can throw you off in desert heat. Severing your ties and making love to lies brings cowardice, regret, and foul deceit. So that verse, to me, is starting to feel like, all right, I'm free, but I don't have the real part of my life that matters to me, my daughter with me, you know?
Right.
That's what that line, but it's definitely a vague, abstract verse, right? It's
a little bit abstract, I think.
Yeah, and I think, because to me, there is a progression in the verses, but that doesn't mean anything if the audience doesn't feel it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an open question. How definite you want to make the impression, the information that you have a daughter and that she's been taken?
I guess, you know, there's two kinds of writing styles to me, and I wanted to try like a more poetic one, you know, more of like how it feels.
But I think the point that you made about the severing the ties and the lies leads to da 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 and cowardice and deceit. I think there's a subtler and a simpler way at the same time to get that information across,
right,
than just to say it. I think it's a little too
right. I think when I wrote it, I Googled making love to lies because that seemed like a cliche to me. Have you heard that?
Making love to lies. It sounds like the kind of thing you heard before. I couldn't put it down. I just made love to a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That doesn't sound that bad, does it?
Well, no, but it sounds bad for a song. I should get down off my high horse.
You're a lie, lady. Yeah, it seems like there's a gentler way to make that point, maybe out of an action that just kind of organically happens in the mm-hmm. course of
right.
In the course,
because it's more like, yeah, it's abstract.
Because
it's
philosophical. Off of the last line of the first verse that you had, what was the last line of the first verse?
The way you glared at me the other day.
The way you glared at me the other day. That's a nice shelf down from the, you have the Eskimo and the tuxedo, which is just a lot to process.
Yeah.
And then you have that little gentle shelf down the other day and the open vowel at the end of the line. That's a nice, like, verse. So that's, I like that better personally than the onrush of abstract information that comes at the end of the
next. Wow, that's interesting.
But needles and needless, that's nice. And you don't, and that is subtle, I think, isn't it? Needles and needless in the first two lines?
I always pictured it getting a laugh. Mm-hmm. But
so not subtle.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you tell me. I mean, it's I'm never right.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about that one.
I just fail in interesting, fun ways sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Needles. Where is Needles?
Needles is the last town, the most eastern town, like right by the border of California and Nevada, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
On the way to and Reno, like, or somewhere? Or?
I was on my way to Chicago. But yeah, it's probably on the way to Vegas. I don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't been down that way in a while. But it feels like it's one of those last stops for gas places.
Right.
Yeah. You
know, right.
Which is another thing I liked about writing a song about that town. You know, just that's it for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
Grand Junction, Colorado. The end of
is
the...
Is that really? Is
yeah,
that...
I don't know. Yeah.
Do you want to end the podcast with your song? Like one where I can't criticize?
Man, I really laid into you there.
No, that was good. I loved it.
Yay.
I loved it. You're not going to go home and go, oh, I think I ruined my friendship with Dina. Are you?
No, I think I'm going to forget all of this.
No, I'm glad. This is what I want this podcast to be, me playing a song and someone I respect saying, hey, this is how you make it better.
Well, I want to hear the
careful,
other
you're
podcasts.
Putting it, you're putting the capo over
the pick. God,
yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who else you have on.
Yeah.
Are you going to have Paul Simon? I know you like Paul Simon.
I'd love to have Paul Simon on, but...
That would be a get.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Louis knows him, so...
Okay.
Yeah, because he did music for his last show, Horace and Pete.
Does Louis write songs or sing?
I don't know if he's ever written a song. Yeah.
So this would have the opposite problem. This is like so simple that it's probably insubstantial, but this is a tune that, this is like just a simple country tune about a breakup. It goes, stick and frame a patch of earth, some china plates, a band of gold, a few shared things of little worth, and now they're all that's left to hold. She hides her tears, I do my best, as I pull slowly in the drive. Young in love, we lay undressed, and now we can meet each other's eyes. Sad goodbyes, shattered dreams, darker skies I don't think I've seen. I thought love was just one sweet song. I guess I got it wrong. Houston tollway to I-10, never looked this bleak before. Why is the feeling never strong as when you can't have her anymore? Sad goodbyes, shattered dreams, darker skies I don't think I've seen. Hey, I thought love was just one sweet song. I guess I got it wrong.
Start from scratch. Just joking. That was beautiful.
No, it's like, that's really like insubstantial compared to what you did. I don't mean insubstantial in a like a normative way, but...
Right. It's a different song.
But it reminded... Well, it reminded me... your song reminded me of that one because, I don't know, because it's got internal rhymes, kind of like yours.
Hmm.
Both of yours that you played... Like had an interest in internal rhymes, and then it has some of the, some abstract or assertive lines like we were talking about too, but then it also has just like that kind of airy throwaway quality, that thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's all you're gonna say? Come on, dig into it.
Well, I gotta listen to a song a few times because I was a little drunk too.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking scotch.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Like Glenfiddich or something.
No, Johnny Walker Black.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're a man of the people.
Yeah. So, but like I said, when I first hear a song, I definitely heard lyrics and I understood some lyrics, but I was settling into it and just feeling it, you know, more than anything.
Yeah.
And that's what I...
It's the sound of it. I mean,
I saw when I was playing, you were really concentrating because you were my teacher. You had to.
No, I would just play it that way for nobody, I think. But no, you're right. The sound of it.
No, I mean,
always,
when...
Yeah. The sound of a song just trumps like the words every time, I think, don't you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, except to me, words are what I start with and end with, you know. I mean, I'm obviously not a good guitarist and, you know, and I'm learning to write lyrics. That's why I'm doing this podcast. But I still feel like words are the most important part of my songs, you know.
Well, then I think that that's the exercise for you to do is to come at it from a different way. I mean, if you're doing it the same way all the time, you know, starting with the words. Because if I'll do a slew of songs that, I mean, I rarely start with the words, but if I do some songs to start with the words or, you know, I just try to like vary it, the window in to the song, you know. If I'm doing too much of A, I'll try B.
Right, you know? I think I've only written one song where it was music first and the lyrics are okay.
But to do that, like, you know, throw a few more chords into your arsenal or
learn to bar, maybe?
No. Move your fingers around in random ways, you know, around the strings
and let that
guide you or you know, hum a weird thing that's not a scale that you would usually hum and let that guide you.
That's what I feel like I've lost in the years when I've just played more and learned more chords is just like that freedom of, you know, not worrying about like, you know, is this going to go C to G to D, you know?
Right. So. Yeah. If you can lose even that elemental information that you have, I mean, that information could be getting in the way. Do something that sounds good. Yeah. Move your fingers around. I mean, so many great songs were made up by people that didn't know what the hell they were doing, you know, had no knowledge of this scale, that scale.
Right. Yeah. They probably didn't even know that chords were named.
I think so. I mean, I think it's a knowledge thing that we were talking about. It's like, you know this, so what? You know, are you going to let it be an impediment knowing that or try to work with it or around it somehow when you need to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like this scene in Gilligan's Island where Gilligan made wings out of feathers. He glued them together and he jumped off like a rock and he started flying. And he's flying, and Skipper says, "Gilligan, what are you doing?" He's like, "I'm flying." He's like, "You can't fly."
The moment he says that,
he drops.
Yeah.
Gilligan's Island, man.
That's pretty profound.
I remember that's like the only thing I remember from Gilligan's Island that like blew me away.
That one, yeah?
Yeah.
Marianne and her pants didn't blow you away, or?
Well, no, I mean in a different way.
I see.
No, I still jack off to that.
Yeah.
All right.
Marianne or Tina Louise, which one?
No, I think Marianne.
Marianne?
Yeah.
Or Lonnie Anderson from WWE?
Bailey.
Okay.
Yeah, I like, you know, I like the next door girl. I don't like makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah, or at least I don't like the where it's in your face.
Yeah.
In a,
So, sorry, you were trying to end the podcast.
Well, you know. I just wanted to end it on a laugh, but...
We should have ended it on my song then.
No, that was a beautiful song, and I'm really happy that you gave me your 2 cents about my song. That was great.
I can't shut up with the 2 cents, you know? Just
try
to shut me up.
Yeah, you're going to be my favorite guest. You're gonna come on once a week.
Okay. Yeah. Let's just have this be it. I'll be the new Andy.
Yeah.
Get rid of Andy.
Just yell at me for writing shitty songs. All right. That was great. I love it.